From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
And I'm Annette John Hall. Last month, dozens of Philadelphia police officers got caught up in a nationwide probe of offensive social media posts. Some of those officers were placed on desk duty.
The Philadelphia Police Department has taken 72 officers off the street because of social media posts described as racist, sexist, and violent.
The police commissioner took it one step further, promising to fire some of those officers.
But Billy Penn reporter Max Marin says if you think they're going to lose their jobs for good, don't be so sure.
But just because a Philadelphia police officer gets fired doesn't mean that they're permanently fired. A full one-third of officers who have been terminated over the last decade have been able to get their job back.
Why is it so difficult to permanently fire a Philly cop? And what can the city's leaders do about it?
Today on The Why, the roundhouse revolving door.
Max joined us to talk about how the city has handled police misconduct over the years. How's the issue of cops getting rehired after they're fired? How's that played out in sort of recent history?
In 2013, a police lieutenant was caught on camera hitting a woman in the face at a parade in North Philadelphia. There was pretty clear footage of the incident that happened and strong public backlash. The officer was fired at the time, but eventually...
As we've been telling you, a veteran Philadelphia police officer has gotten his job back after being seen on this viral video punching a woman last September. We are now joined...
2015, there was an officer who was fired for his involvement in three on-duty shootings over 3 years. He shot three people over 3 years. The department said, this is enough. Most officers go their entire career without one on-duty shooting.
Right.
And he had three in 3 years. They let him go. But he also was able to get his job back. There was no criminal conviction in this case. And short of having a criminal conviction, it turns out that it's pretty easy to get your job back on the police department, even when you've done something that, you know, critics would say has created a serious breach of public trust.
So why is the system set up like this, where cops are fired only to be rehired through this process?
For the police department, this dates back to the 1960s, when what's called the grievance and arbitration process was codified in the state union agreements with the municipal workforce. Police and firemen are considered emergency personnel, and they don't have the ability to strike. So this is kind of considered among labor experts as like a trade-off. They can file these grievances against their employer to settle like various disputes. And it's not just like wrongful terminations. It's, you know, overtime disputes.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, I didn't get the promotion that I was promised.
So at the time that was being put into these contracts in the 60s, like you said, what was going on around corruption in the police department at the time?
Some of the earliest misconduct scandals really started to come out in the 1950s, where you would find internal discipline just sort of being this huge sham process where officers were also being found to have like beaten suspects with impunity. And there was, falsified paperwork and like all these sorts of things, so, like one-off situations that started to gain more momentum in the 50s and then into the 60s. You got to remember, too, in the 1970s, Frank Rizzo, the famous Philadelphia mayor, who was also a police commissioner,
right,
took over City Hall.
We made some mistakes. Sometimes I said things I wish I had. But we were proud of our city.
And really sort of established a code of conduct for police officers. You know, he was sort of famously law and order, advocated kind of openly for extrajudicial violence in certain cases, and, you know, really believed in this sort of like strongman police force. And that sent a pretty clear message to the officers that the mayor had their back when it came to enacting justice their own way.
I think that whether you're a police chief, there are many, many people that you upset when you're trying to do your job. But I think the proof of the pudding was, or is, that I ran for mayor as to resigning from police chief, and the majority of people of Philadelphia elected me.
But as Rizzo is supporting this more brutal kind of policing, people start to take notice and pay attention. The civil rights movement's happening in the 1960s, and the police department's treatment of minority communities is under scrutiny. And you have the Philadelphia Inquirer, the paper of records, starting to investigate this kind of misconduct around the same time.
So as there's kind of this growing public awareness, we do start to see some firings in the 80s and 90s, right?
Sure. Police departments are accountable to the public, and as pressure intensifies, these commissioners start to respond and they start to dismiss certain problem officers from the police force. But what you start to see happening through the 80s and the 90s, you know, one scandal after another, barring any criminal convictions in these cases, a lot of officers are able to get their jobs back.
And it's through that arbitration process that went into police contracts back in the 60s.
Right. You start to see that officers are really familiar with it. If they basically avoided getting a criminal conviction in the case, they figure, I can get my job back for this. You know, one officer in the early 90s I found had been caught selling switchblades to a state trooper. And he had basically said, this was a sham case, I never should have been arrested for this, even though he admitted to doing something that was against the law. Another case, an officer had been arrested twice on different assault charges. One of them was against his own female colleague. The charges ended up being dropped, and he was able to apply to get his job back. Now, some people might look at this and say, well, if the charges were dropped, why shouldn't an officer get his or her job back? And that's a big moral quandary in a lot of these cases. Officers are owed due process, but they've also taken a vow to protect the public. Now, do you want someone to be a police officer if they've showed extreme misjudgment, even if there wasn't a criminal act? You know, we're talking about actions that would get you fired from virtually any job in the world.
The person who actually does these firings is the police commissioner. How does the police commissioner fit into all this?
Police commissioners are appointed by the mayor, and they're the ones who were firing the cops, only to have their decisions overruled by these arbitrators. And this has been a source of immense frustration. You know, in 2014, former police commissioner Charles Ramsey fired 6 narcotics cops after a federal corruption probe. You know, they were accused of beating up and stealing over $500,000 from drug suspects. It was a big deal.
Conduct like this is simply unacceptable, cannot be tolerated, and is inexcusable. And there's not much more I can say about it. This was a malignancy inside our department, and today it was removed.
But the problem wasn't removed, and not permanently at least. You know, a jury acquitted the officers on all the charges, and they were eventually reinstated through the arbitration process. You know, more recently, our police commissioner right now, Richard Ross, put the 72 officers on desk duty over their offensive and racist Facebook posts.
We will not be shy about meeting out the appropriate discipline. We need to get it right for the community that looks to us for protection and guidance.
He's clearly saying he doesn't support some of these officers, but in the end of the day, if he fires them and there's an arbitration process that says he has to reinstate them, he's going to have to listen.
But Max, isn't arbitration neutral? Why would an arbitration process reinstate somebody who clearly has a bad track record?
Some people will put the blame on the arbitrators themselves. Let's take that example in 2013 of the woman getting slapped in the face by a police lieutenant in North Philadelphia.
Right.
That was a case where a single arbitrator examined frame-by-frame evidence of the video and made an argument that, you know, the entire story wasn't being told here, that the woman had actually slipped on a soda can and that's why she fell. And it just happened to coincide with the moment that the officer took a swing at her. And actually, the officer was trying to take a beer out of her hand or remove something from her hand. He wasn't trying to swing at her. It just looked bad, basically. And the ruling was, at the end of the day, that, you know, he hadn't done anything fireable here. He was just doing his job.
I should say that we went back and watched that video, and just to an onlooker, it seems like a difficult case to make.
Sure, and other people have pointed that out. There was a police watchdog named Chuck Wexler, who I talked to in Washington, D.C., who cited this specific case, and he's not even from Philadelphia, and he said this case, you know, sort of exemplifies everything that's wrong with the process. He said if an arbitrator can watch this video footage and say this officer is not at fault for what happened here, then something is wrong with this process.
You know, he gets reinstated with all back pay. I mean, it just, you look at that and you wonder, well, you know, what does it take, you know, to hold someone accountable?
And he blames the arbitrators themselves. He says these people need to be held accountable for looking at the evidence that the public has looked at in certain cases, in the case where there's sort of viral video to go with it, and then saying, you know, how can we let these people keep making these decisions, which impacts public trust?
Officers should be given due process. It's more the arbitrator's decision that I think is problematic.
Are the arbitrators fellow police officers?
In most cases, they're attorneys, you know, maybe sort of longtime labor union negotiators, labor relations officials. So no, they're not often police officers, but the arbitrators are selected through this process of, like, you know, supposed consensus between parties. But, you know, what happens often is that, you know, some of these arbitrators are also being picked on their records. So if your records over time are just like constantly ruling in favor of police officers, there's going to be like a larger selection of arbitrators who just are generally favorable to the police department.
What did the city and the union say about the process? I mean, do they agree that, there are flaws here?
They do agree. Fingers are kind of pointed in various directions. The police union has historically said that this is a matter of just basically us doing a better job than you. You know, your ability to collect evidence is weak, they're telling the city. Monica Marchetti Brock, who's the director of Kenny's labor relations department, sort of disagrees with the assessment that the arbitration process is broken.
I mean, could the disciplinary policy be tightened? Of course. Could it be strengthened? Of course. But I think that it's not the reason that these officers get their job back.
I mean, they're basically saying that this is a case-by-case basis. We win some, we lose some. History would show that they lose a lot more than they win.
Max, has anybody tried to change the way this process works?
In the last two decades, since the early 2000s, there has been a sort of consistent, slow push to rectify some of these issues with the arbitration process that people have identified and said this is kind of where the system is just repeating itself over and over. Past mayors have tried to bring this to the table and failed. It doesn't really go anywhere. They introduce these task forces to look at the arbitration process and how they can tweak it in the contract, and it just sort of fizzles out and doesn't go anywhere. But you have to keep in mind, too, this is like a political issue.
Mm-hmm.
One, there's, you know, a lot of police officers in the city. You know, the city respects its police officers. And the police union itself is also, you know, a political force. You know, the union endorses candidates every election cycle. They put money out there for and against candidates that they don't like. So elected officials, you know, are beholden to the police union in a way that maybe complicates this process a lot.
So now that there's more public awareness and protest against these cops, I mean, there was a protest right outside of police headquarters a couple of weeks ago over the Facebook cops. And we've already established that these 72 cops are likely to get their jobs back if they get fired. Could that public pressure affect some kind of reform?
Well, the next contract negotiation's up next year. If there is public outcry, I'm sure the mayor's office would, you know, have to account for that. What is going to happen, though, is that this is a contract agreement. Kenny's labor negotiators themselves say that, you know, whenever you want to ask for something from a union, you have to offer something in return. Money has always been tight when it comes to salary increases for the police department. It's the biggest department in the city, right? There's 7,000, nearly 7,000 uniformed cops that we're talking about here. So it's not as simple as just saying, okay, we'll give everybody more money and we'll throw in a couple other things. It's, you know, these are big city budget questions here.
Max, thank you so much.
Thank you, Max.
Hi, thanks for having me in.
Max Maron is a reporter for Billy Penn. The Why is produced by me, Annette John Hall.
And me, Shai Ben Yaakov.
Along with Alex Stern and with editorial direction from Katie Culinary.
Tweet us at Shai Ben Yaakov.
And at Annette JH.
We'll be back Monday.